Hello everyone, and welcome to CRAMSurg, clinical research appraisal and methodology for surgical trainees, where we pick a paper fresh from the press on a hot general surgical topic. We review it for you, we present it for you, we critique its methodology for you, and provide top-of-the-field expert opinion and teaching on research appraisal and methodology. My name is Gio Perrin, and together with Professor Sababala Subramanian and Maria Digby, we bring you CRAMSurg, from the wonderful region of the Yorkshire and the Humber.
Welcome back, everyone. Today we are going to have a chat about a paper about the use of ICG or indocyanine green in colorectal anastomosis. I'll then be briefly talking about students' T-test for paired samples. I'll leave you to it.
I'm reviewing this paper with Daniel Thomas, who is one of the CT ones working with us here. The title of the paper is Indocyanine Green Fluorescence Imaging in Prevention of Colorectal Anastomotic Leakage, a Randomized Control Trial, is also known as the ICG Coloral. It's authored by Johar Ryan et al. And published in JAMA in March of this year. This paper is of interest because the central research question has some clinical significance that every surgical trainee will be interested in, more so those with interest in colorectal surgery. Anastomotic leak is a nightmare to surgeons, patients, and everyone looking after the patient, we all know. And it's been reported that up to 19% of patients with colorectal resections will develop anastomotic leakage. This impacts prognosis, especially if there is need for adjuvant therapy, and this impedes progress with that. The overall quality of patients is also impacted, and there's a report that shows that healthcare cost increases times three of the original cost of the surgery if there is anastomotic leakage. Indocyanine green is a tricarbocyanine. It's water soluble and binds to plasma protein, mainly albumin. It absorbs near infrared wavelengths and emits a longer wavelength, and this makes it an excellent tool for assessing tissue perfusion using the recent robotic and laparoscopic cameras. Previous studies on ICG are mainly retrospective. Some are small size sample and focused on the left colon and rectal resections. There are a few RCTs on this with conflicting evidence and mainly focusing on rectal resections. So this particular study looks at both the right and left colonic resection, excluding low anterior resection. I'll hand over to Daniel.
Thanks, Constantine. So the main aim of this study was to compare the anastomotic leak rate in laparoscopic colorectal resections, excluding low anterior resections in patients with and without intraoperative indocyanine green to assess tissue perfusion to aid in anastomosis. The hypothesis was that indocyanine green fluorescence would decrease the anastomotic leakage rate for patients in this study. Using the PICO format, the patients that were included were all elective patients with any colorectal pathology scheduled for laparoscopic resections with primary anastomosis. And the intervention group was to assess bowel perfusion using ICG, indocyanine green, as a means for determining whether anastomosis is right at that particular point, and comparing it to just clinical assessments as surgeons would routinely to assess bowel perfusion. And the main outcome and primary outcome was the anastomotic leak rate, and they had other secondary outcomes as shown below. So how did they perform this? It was a prospective randomized multi-center study occurring in five centers in total, four secondary and one tertiary care hospital in Finland over a 5-year period from 2018 to 2023. The inclusion criteria was any colorectal pathology for elective laparoscopic resection with primary anastomosis. However, they excluded anastomosis below the peritoneal fold, IBD, stomas, laparotomy, if there was an abscess or fistula, and if there was any previous adverse events to indocyanine or iodine. And then they randomized patients by site with a one-to-one randomization with a separate researcher that wasn't involved in the study. What they did was administer 5 milligrams of indocyanine prior to anastomosis, and then they checked the maximal time for visual intensity and used a subjective intensity scale from 0 to 2. What does 0 mean? 0 basically means there was no indocyanine fluorescence detectable. 2 means indocyanine fluorescence detectable was similar to adjacent bowel tissue. And one was basically intermediate and based on this on the surgeon's discretion. So they also noted if there was a change, need for a change to the anastomotic site. And if 0 was recorded, it meant that there needed to be a change, and 2 meant it was safe to anastomose. And indocyanine green was then administered after anastomosis, and the time to maximum intensity was also recorded for the proximal and distal segments of anastomosis. And this was done with the control arm who were only clinically assessed for anastomosis. They then did a statistical analysis on 3 ways: the intention to treat, the modified intention to treat, and the as-treated analysis. And then an independent t-test was that used to compare the mean and a Pearson test to compare the categorical variables.
So, I would discuss the result of this study. Thank you, Daniel, for telling us about the methods. This is the CONSORT flow chart. So, over the 5-year study period, 2,705 patients were screened for eligibility. Out of these, 1,136 were randomized, 567 to the ICG group, and 569 to the control arm of the study. 31 patients were excluded from the ICG group after randomization for not meeting the inclusion criteria. Similarly, 28 patients were excluded in the control arm of the study. This leads to 536 in the ICG group and 541 patients in the control arm of the study. 37 patients in the ICG group did not receive the ICG during surgery for logistic reasons, and 29 patients randomized to the control arm of the study received ICG during surgery based on surgeon's decision. At the end of the study, the authors did 3 analyses. First was intention to treat, which included the patients randomized to the ICG and the control arm, and then modified intention to treat analysis, which included 536 in the ICG group and 541 in the control arm of the study, after excluding those that didn't meet the inclusion criteria but was randomized to the study. They then went on to do the as per protocol analysis, which they termed as treated analysis here, and included 528 patients in the ICG group and 549 patients in the control arm of the study. This table is a bit tiny, unfortunately, shows the baseline characteristics in the modified intention to treat and per protocol population. The characteristics shows the patient characteristics, pathology, stage of tumor, and the experience of surgeons. They're all very similar and were not statistically different from each other. both in the control arm of the study and the intervention arm. The primary outcome of the study, starting off with the intention to treat analysis, the overall anastomotic leak in the intention to treat analysis showed 5.8% of the patients in the ICG had anastomotic leak, compared to 7.9% of the patients with a percentage point difference of 2.1. This is not statistically significant at p-value of 0.16. Similar results were shown in the right colonic and left colonic anastomosis. The lesser anastomotic leak in the intervention arm of the study compared to the control arm, but there was no statistical significance. The modified intention to treat analysis showed concordance results with the intention to treat analysis. The overall anastomotic leak was 6.2% in the intervention arm compared to 8.3% in the control arm of the study, which was not statistically significant. And that is same for the right and the left colonic resections. For the per protocol analysis, which has been termed as treated analysis in the study, the overall anastomotic leak was 5.9% in the intervention arm and 8.6% in the control arm of the study. This was also not statistically significant. There is the point difference in the left colonic resection was 4.9, but this was not statistically significant as well. The operative details and the secondary outcomes were shown in this table, which unfortunately the font is small. They compared the intraoperative complication, blood loss, operating time, overall anastomotic leak as reported earlier, postoperative infection, the type of anastomosis that was done in the intervention group and the control group. And every parameter compared were not statistically significant, apart from the change of anastomotic site, which was 7.2% in the intervention arm and 4.4% in the control arm of the study at p-value of 0.048. To discuss the limitation of this study, I would hand back to Daniel.
Okay, thanks, Constantine. And talking about the limitations, as we can see in the way the study, ICG signal intensity was reported, it's quite subjective because it's based on subjective decisions by the surgeons as to whether it's a one or a two. And in terms of the camera distance from it, the signal intensity varies quite a lot depending on the distance from the actual anastomotic site. So that even provides more subjectivity in the way surgeons report the actual fluorescence of ICG. The ICG fluorescence was also quite novel to the surgeons at the study's onset. There was no teaching to try and standardize what will be the norm throughout the study, and I thought we thought that, and they have reported that as a limitation within the study. They had to have a modified intention to treat because the exclusion criteria was not applied correctly. What they did was randomize everyone, and then they found out that some people weren't excluded who should have been excluded. This was because clinicians who were not involved in the study were recruiting patients and recruited all those patients, and some patients also had incomplete data. Because those clinicians that weren't involved in the study recruited patients who actually refused to participate, there was also no information about them. I'll then hand over to Constantine to conclude.
In conclusion, the author stated that ICG imaging does not statistically reduce the overall anastomotic leak in laparoscopic colorectal resection, excluding low anterior resection. But they suggested that it may be useful in left-sided colonic resection. In terms of our perspective, we think this study has been well conducted. They had large sample size, is randomized, is multi-centered. It was a pragmatic study. They didn't need to change anything they were doing before, except introducing the intervention. And they used triple contrast CT to assess anastomotic leak, which I think is good because this will yield more anastomotic leak. In the clinical domain, the downside, we asked the question if this study was needed in the first instance because there is an existing systematic review and meta-analysis that have concluded that left-sided colonic resection using ICG will be beneficial in reducing anastomotic leak. And including right-sided colon, clinically, this is usually not a problem as small bowel is being anastomosed to the large bowel, and perfusion is usually not what would lead to leakage, except there are other patient or surgeon or other factors. So we don't think that these studies contributed significantly to the existing literature. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
As usual, just a brief summary about what we discussed after the paper presentation. We started by chatting about the function of understanding green and the mechanisms by which fluorescence works. We then moved on our discussion to talk about complex interventions. Prof. Saba shared a very interesting paper, which I will be putting in the show notes, essentially debunking the importance of standardization and the complexities that go around complex interventions, including ICG. We then had a brief chat about the importance of, for example, standardizing the anastomotic technique, as well as the bowel preparation, which to an extent was performed in this study, as well as other aspects of pre- and postoperative care. We had a brief look at the sample size calculations and realized that the authors were expecting a 4% difference between the two groups when they performed their sample size calculations. But the difference they actually detected was half of that, about 2%. As a result, it is still possible that the study is underpowered as their estimated sample sizes were performed based on a much bigger expected difference between the two groups. And finally, we discussed how, at this stage in surgical practice, due to the introduction of robotics and the standardization of laparoscopic stacks that are pretty much all able to support ICG use, and the evidence behind ICG becomes relatively irrelevant because it is used so commonly by a lot of surgeons. But then we discussed also how often these trials take quite a long time to set up and for the results to come out. They might well have been designed at the point where the technology was not this readily available. Right, I'll leave you to the teaching session. Enjoy.
It's okay. So we're going to carry on with our how-to guide on statistical tests, and we're going to talk about per sample C test today. Usual disclaimers, I'm not a statistician and not I am an expert in statistical software. I just enjoy using both. A quick visual summary of what we've discussed so far. So we talked and talked again and again about assumptions, particularly normality and scedasticity in the past few sessions. And I think it's key that you guys remember what those are. Probably the most important thing we've been talking about. We briefly touched on students T, ANOVA, Welch ANOVA, and Chui ANOVA, and how to run them on Jomovi. And today we are going to move a bit further in this discussion. But first, we are going to run a little recap. I'm going to try and take you on a sort of science fiction journey in a dystopian future where, you know, the cost of studying has gone up incredibly in the past few years. Students have gone out and protested violently against the cost of university. And junior doctors are really, really underpaid. In this fantastic, imagine this world where all of this is happening, there's two people. One is Maddy, for her privacy, we're going to call her Mad. And one is Nith, and for his privacy, we're going to call him N1. And these are random pictures of them taken. And because they are out of money and cash stripped, they decide to start a business producing cannabis. And they want to know if they're doing a good job. Nith is running the plantation in his house. And he has decided last week to plant two rows of cannabis, one at 25, one at 27 degrees. And he wants to know if they are different. So he drops a text to Maddy. And Maddy answers, well, how many grams did each plant give you? Now, Nith, why do you think, sorry, N1, for your privacy. Why did you think Maddy asked you how many grams did each plant give you?
Because we need numerical continuous variables to make our calculations.
Yeah, that sounds good. What test do you think Maddy's going to make you run?
Student T.
Yeah, probably right. And, you know, obviously you go count your grams and you go back to your phone and she goes, oh, remember to check assumptions. Now, you do feel that you should know about these assumptions. And you also don't want to ask her because she takes ages to answer. So what assumptions are we talking about here, Nith?
Normality and scedasticity before running a student T to make sure the data is normally distributed and the variances are not massively different.
Absolutely, yes. So for normality, in Jamovi, we run a Shapiro-Wilk test. And for scedasticity, we run a Levent test. And Jamovi will prompt you to run those when you are trying to run a student's tea. Now, let's move on slightly in our recap. You suddenly remembered that you had another row at 23. So one at 23, one at 25, one at 27. Because as we all know, in your world, heating costs a lot of money. So you ask her, what should I do? What do you think Matt is going to say?
He's now got three samples with three sets of continuous data. He should run an ANOVA. I'm sure he will remember to check the assumptions before running it.
Absolutely. And you will remember to run this, to check the assumptions, right?
Yes.
Yes, you will. Yeah. Perfect. And that's what she said. Well, Chief, the variances are different, remember to check. Right, now, suddenly, you are walking around your apartment, and mostly because of the smell, you realize that you have Googled the best fertilizers for cannabis plants, and you decided to buy the top three to give it a go. So you've got a bag of bat guano, some containers so that advanced nutrients grow, and some manure, and you used one each for the three rows that you have planted at different temperatures. And now you want to know if these two, these three different fertilizers and these three different temperatures do have an effect on your cannabis grow. What do you think you should run?
I could run a two-way ANOVA.
Yeah, so you've got three samples, three sets of continuous data, and two variables you want to look at. So you could run a two-way ANOVA, as we discussed. Again, provided that all your assumptions are met. Now, let's move on slightly. You woke up in the morning, and you had a look at your plantation, and you realized that your plants were rather floppy, as you can see on the screen. Because you are a bit OCD with your cannabis plants, every morning you count the leaves, and you realize they've lost some. And you gave him some fizzy water. You're a bit worried that you made things worse. So what type of situation do you think this is?
Well, there is only one population. One intervention has been performed on it, and the data can be collected again. Sounds like paired samples?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a scenario where you could potentially run a paired T-test. which is what we are going to talk about today, very briefly. Right, so if you look at the overall arching plan, we're still in continuous data. We're still looking at normally distributed data, and today we're going to talk particularly about paired samples. So we're going to have a look at the demonstration with Jamovi. Just a brief history of the paired sample t-test. It's a bit of a repeat as it comes from Steele William Gossett, also known as Student. As you remember, he used to work at Guinness and he used to publish a lot of stuff in Biometrica. A brief further note that's fairly interesting given that we talked about Fisher last time. Fisher, Gossett, and Pearson were good friends. And he said that, Gossett was very good at being friends with them because they both had a massive ego. At some point, Gossett had an admirer that followed him around in the streets and was complimenting him. And his answer was, well, Fisher would have discovered it all anyway. So quite a peculiar character, a bit more of a private man compared to his fellows. Now, let's get a bit more into the topic. What do we mean by paired data? Paired data is basically happens when each data point that you've got in one group has a corresponding and meaningfully connected data point in another group. And this all sounds fairly abstract, but the most common example that gets brought in is you have a bunch of patients that have high blood pressure, you measure the blood pressure, you do some treatment, and then you measure the blood pressure again. And you've got paired data. You've got pre-treatment and post-treatment blood pressure. And the concept is relatively straightforward. Similarly to what you do with a T student, you do have some assumptions that need to be respected. Assumption one is, and always will be, normality that needs to be checked all the time. So just remember that. Other assumptions that are relevant are obviously the samples have to be paired, otherwise, you won't run this particular type of test, and the samples should be big enough. Is homostaticity here relevant? Well, not really, because the samples are, as we said, paired with each other. So variances are not necessarily tested. They don't need to be tested. So to give you a practical example from my own data set, as we've been doing so far, I'm going to give you an example. As you remember, and you must know by now because I've talked about this 5 times, as part of my dissertation, I collected data about papers that were advertised on Twitter by publishing journal for the purposes of running a paired sample T. I decide to compare the number of retweets from the same papers first when they've been tweeted using simple text, and then when they've been tweeted using simple text and a picture. So there has been an additional intervention, which is using the picture, and let's see if that gave it a boost. So let's have a go. Let's have a quick look at this demonstration. So Jamovi helps you a lot. T-test is there. Pair samples t-test. Hard to make it easier than that, isn't it? And because I've kind of ordered this data set in a clever way, I've got retweet. I've got retweets after picture. There you go. As long as you know where to find your data and as long as you know what you're testing, it will be relatively straightforward. Your assumptions check are here. Obviously, because we are running paired samples, stochasticity variance test is not there, but you can run a normality test, which again suggests that the data is not normally distributed, and therefore you should not be using this test really. You can also change your hypothesis. So we're testing for equal. You can test for measure one bigger than measure two, measure one smaller than measure two. In all honesty, you can identify what the direction of the effect is by simply looking at the data. But the math behind the test is slightly different depending on which one you choose.